Good afternoon. Welcome to our meeting. It's 1:30 p.m. on January 7th, 2025, and time to reconvene the regular meeting of the Scottish County Board of Commissioners. I'm Sid Logan, President of the Commission. Joining me today are Commissioner Tony Olson, our Vice President, Commissioner Julieta Altamirano Crosby, our Secretary, John Harlow, our CEO General Manager, Colin Willenbrock, our Chief Legal Officer, Alison Morrison, Clerk of the Board, Deputy Chief of the Board, Logan Stolzner, Deputy Clerk of the Board. Please mute or turn off your cell phones or electronic devices at this time. This session is for the staff to present to the board a brief overview of their departments. And I will turn it over to our Chief Legal Officer, Colin Willenbrock, to facilitate the conversation.
Yeah, thank you. Good afternoon. As you noted, I'm Colin Willenbrock, our Chief Legal Officer. Today is a different afternoon session and a different meeting. This is kind of this overview of the utility, one for our new commissioner, Commissioner Altamirano Crosby, but also for all of the commissioners to really kind of hit that reset, refresh button and learn about our different departments. We have new faces at the district, as well as a very complex operation that we really want to start early in the year to get those questions out there, as well as introduce you to the folks within the departments. A lot of utilities do this in different ways. Some utilities work one-on-one with the new commissioner. Some utilities do it, during the election, do it prior to the new commissioner being sworn in. And others do it over time, over a six-year period. We thought it would be helpful, and a lot of credit to Allison Morrison and her team as we strategized over what would the best way or best approach to do. So what we've planned is two afternoons here in our first two meetings of January, where we're going to do high-level overviews of just the district in general, 15-minute presentations by department. So we've encouraged folks to put together 3 to 5 slides, give a brief explanation of what we do. And all of that really needs to be viewed within the context or under the lens of your role as commissioners in governing this utility. So what areas have you delegated that authority to John Harlow, our CEO, general manager, and how has he delegated those respective tasks down to the rest of the organization? So with that, certainly always like to invite questions along the way to keep us on track, because we do have 5 presentations today. I would encourage you to consider keeping those questions, writing them down, sharing them with Allison Morrison, and we can respond in writing back to the totality of the commission, as well as if there's a topic that we want to delve into a little bit deeper in the future, we can certainly note that up for a future meeting and give a more in-depth presentation. There are admittedly some topics that will be receiving in-depth presentations at a later date. One being governance. We're going to have a special, as we do every year, a special retreat, special meeting where we're going to go through those governance policies. You get to better understand them, train on them, and we make changes where we think changes are due, where you would like to see some changes in the way that you govern this utility on behalf of your constituents. Another area is our inclusion initiative. We will have a presentation from Sherelle Gordon later in February. She'll give a presentation on all the work that's happening around districts. Strategic planning is another big one. We don't intend on covering that in our 15 minutes because there's a lot to cover, a lot to discuss. And so Laura Lemke will be presenting a little bit on that topic. So those are just a few that you can anticipate getting more information on, but certainly encourage you to keep those questions. If there is a desire for a more in-depth dialogue on topics here in the future, as you all know, we do receive a lot of briefings on a lot of topics throughout the year. You'll see markets and a lot of very complex topics that are going to come. But I encourage you to keep track of your questions, submit those to Allison, and we can get you prompt responses as we go. So I am tasked with kicking this thing off, unless there are any questions before we jump right in.
Allison and Allison.
Process questions only.
Send them to Allison. Write questions down and send them.
She's a fast learner. I appreciate it.
I will be bad as well.
We can go to the first slide here, our next slide. So why are we discussing all this in the context of, you know, getting the commission up to speed? Really, our primary job is to make sure you're informed so you can make good decisions on behalf of the utility. The American Public Power Association, of which we're a member, has said this is one of the most significant things that we do, is having a well-informed commission. When you're well-informed, the utility performs remarkably better. And so we need to make sure that you understand the issues so you can make those decisions on behalf of your constituents. And there's been an increased emphasis put on that understanding of governance and how we make sure that our governing boards not only govern themselves, but govern the utility. So this is of heightened importance. I think we do it very well, but I think we also we need to take the time, as we do annually, to reevaluate our government's policies and make sure that they're serving your needs. Next slide, please. So just a little bit of primer here so we kind of understand the foundation. So Washington law, public utilities, which are a unique creature in the state of Washington and across the country, were initially passed by initiative number one in 1930 by the people. So this was an initiative of the people that said, and particularly in rural communities, farming and ranching communities, that we can't get service. And the economics didn't work from the investor-owned utilities and the private utilities. Later, from that foundation and the desire and the call from the voters themselves, was RCW 54, where it was enabled into statute. And that really is kind of our foundational playbook. 54 authorizes and outlines all of your authorities as a public utility, what we can and can't do. Like most statutes, often requires some interpretation and requires some guidance on how we want to implement some of those authorities. And that's where we then move into our governance policies. But under 54, you'll see kind of your three primary duties as a commissioner, which is, you know, hiring and firing a chief executive officer, a chief administrative officer to administrate all of the affairs of the district, making sure that we pass a budget, and making sure we pass rates to make sure we have sufficient revenues to meet our objectives. Probably encompassing all of that on top of those three paramount duties is really your policy setting and strategy direction authority. It's up to you to decide on behalf of your constituents where you want this utility to go. You then use your authorities to make sure that we get there. Those powers are exercised through this three-member commission. You serve six-year terms, as you know, and all of the action that you take usually requires, generally requires, a quorum of the board of two. Action is taken through a resolution or a motion, which becomes part of the minutes, which are public records. Next slide. One other point on that last piece in terms of RCW 54, there are 28 PUDs within the state of Washington. That do a number of different utility services, electricity, water, sewer, telecom. All of that authority is also enumerated under RCW 54. And that would be, I wanted to make the point, that's different than an investor-owned utility, which we have several within the state of Washington. Those utilities are essentially governed by private shareholders who elect the board of directors, different from cooperatives, which are member-owned, member-directed, as well as municipal utilities like the Seattle City Light, which is a subsidiary of the city of Seattle. Okay, so with that kind of statutory framework in mind, so we have our foundation of RCW 54, which is our enabling statute that gives us all the authorities that we've come to know. Then we have to decide, well, how do we want to do this? How do we want to work together effectively? And that's where our governance policies come into play. Our governance policies are on our website. They're readily available under our About tab to the commission, right next to all of our agenda and meeting information. And under those governance policies, it really is a philosophical discussion on how you want to govern the utility as a respected body. And some of the principles that fall behind or that foundationally are under our governance policies are compliance. Number one, compliance. We want to comply with the law, comply with our fiduciary responsibilities. Those are ethical considerations, public records considerations, as well as reporting and reliability compliance considerations. The other piece is assurance of an effective general manager. I think that often is one of those kind of, oh yeah, we all know that type of things, but that is probably one of the most important things that you do, because he or she is your conduit to the organization. So assuring an effective general manager where expectations are clearly outlined for the general manager, and then those expectations are set through the strategic direction. Here's the direction that we would like to go. You are essentially the strategy body, and then the means to get there are really kind of a function of the general manager as the chief administrative officer. And that is that strategic planning process. That is our meetings process. Those are the dialogues and discussions that we have over rate strategies, budgeting strategies, reliability strategies, safety strategies, affordability strategies, conservation strategies, power supply strategies. Everything that you do is a strategic discussion around strategy and getting to those end goals. And then it wouldn't make sense to set strategies if we weren't also monitoring those strategies. So monitoring performance is also a key component that you'll find throughout our governance policies. And within those, it's monitoring the performance of the CEO general manager. It's monitoring the financial performance of the utility, making sure we understand those metrics that we have in place, the safety performance, the reliability performance, and so on and so forth. So monitoring becomes a really important piece. And then evaluation of how we're doing in terms of monitoring. Evaluation includes not just evaluation of the general manager or evaluation of those metrics, but evaluation of yourselves. And are you effectively meeting the objectives of the governance policies that you've laid out? And that's why we have those annual retreats where we sit down and say, how are we doing? Let's evaluate ourselves in an open special session, open meeting, where we can discuss areas that are working, areas that are not working, and areas where we'd like to see some change. All right, next slide. Trying to cram all this into four slides is challenging. This is kind of that 1,000-foot eye of everything that we need to know, but I would have been remiss not to include this slide because it is so critically important. This is another topic, public records and disclosure, as well as the OPMA, the Open Public Meetings Act, that we are required by law to give you a more in-depth training on, which will occur. Sarah DiVittorio from my office is a state-renowned expert in public records laws and does an outstanding presentation, which you'll receive later this year. But as we jump in and kind of the precursor for the start of this year, it is important to remind everybody that virtually all district records are public records. Everything that you do is open to the public. Every email, every text, every Teams chat, we encourage you to view under the lens of this could be or would be disclosed to the public. That includes data and information on our systems, and we shouldn't expect any privacy in those communications as well. So it's the same message that we give to new employees when we do our new employee orientation. Working for a public agency is an incredible privilege. And it comes with great responsibility, and it comes with that understanding that everything that we will do is transparent and open to the public. So with that, that is kind of our primer on the foundation of what we do as a governing body. We now have our government relations team, which is going to give you an overview of our government relations work.
Can we go back to that, please? I think, Commissioner, I would probably have it. That one item is very important. It's why we have our utility phone, our utility devices. So it's important that we communicate with the public. And then we still have the protocol column, right? Where if we get an email that's PUD related, our personal email, we forward it to our PUD email and we delete it, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So that's the protocol.
Thank you.
If people are going to reach out to you in every way they know, and not necessarily. So I know we're going to get training, but I just wanted to underline.
I'm aware. It's similar with the city council and all the equipment that we have. And it's if you text this public.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for the reminder.
Hello, good afternoon. I'm Kim Johnston, my new title, right? Chief Government Relations and Strategy Officer here at the district. That means that I oversee our government relations programs, and our strategic planning. Today, we're gonna park the strategic planning work and just focus on government relations. I have a small but mighty team, so I was able to embarrass them a little and put all of their faces on this slide. So that is the full team. Again, we're just focusing on government relations today. And as you all are elected officials, you understand that public policy can have big and small impacts, and those impacts can be positive or negative on our operations. And we have a team here, and I'm very, very lucky to work for a place that really sees the value in government relations and has invested in a program so that we can show up and inform our policy leaders so they can make the best decisions possible. So what that means here is that we have folks, and I'm going to walk through the slide. So on your left, you see Brenda White. She does our local government relations. That means that she's engaging with city councils, county councils. She helps us develop really thoughtful strategies when we have major projects, how to get our local electeds bought in on those projects early in the process. She's a master connector. She knows all kinds of people and can see unusual connections that benefit us in amazing ways. Next, you've got Ryan Collins. You met him earlier today with his presentation. And next to him is Harrington. I think they're here too. They do our state government relations program. So they're dealing with state senators and representatives, state agencies, rulemaking. Ryan in particular is down in Olympia a whole lot during the legislative session. And then I handle our federal government relations work and oversee the team and make sure that we have a cohesive strategy that we're working within, always keeping the mission, the values, the strategic plan, and what we'll revisit in a bit, our guiding principles in mind as we make decisions. I do want to point out, I did the math on my team. There's four of us. We have 70 years collectively of government relations across federal, state, and local work. That's pretty incredible. We love our work. It's a really interesting industry. We see it as a craft, and we bring that passion to work every day. So I just thought that was a fun little tidbit.
So your average age would be then.
Now you know. HR said, right?
So no 2 days look the same in the world of government relations, but there are some key functions that we do. I'm not going to read every one of these bullets, but we really develop strategies and advocate for specific policies that would benefit the PUD and the communities that we serve. We monitor and track legislation and regulations, make sure that we're on top of all of those developments all throughout various processes. We greatly value our relationships with decision makers, policy makers, thought leaders, and stakeholders. We invest a lot of time in building trust-filled relationships. It's foundational to our work, and we say a lot, we want to be solutions-focused. And the way that we show up in rooms means that we want to participate. We want to participate in a way that's in good faith. That when we sit at a table to engage in a process, we're there to try and reach constructive solutions. Doesn't mean it always happens, but that's the way we posture from the beginning every time we come into a room. We analyze bills. We work with amazing subject matter experts across the utility to understand the impacts of those bills and figure out how we want to engage. And we communicate a lot across the utility on what we're doing and why. We communicate with leadership and you all our best to keep you in the loop as much as possible in a rapidly evolving industry.
I don't have questions, so I don't have anything to write down, but I do have a comment. Okay. I've watched this work at the PUD evolve over the years, and the benefits for the emphasis that they place on the local, regional, and national contacts and education. It reaps so much benefit for our customers. You know, and sorry, I got a brag on you, honey. In DC, when we develop personal relationships with our delegations, with their staff, which is very important, you know, the Home of PUD is one of the first that they're going to call if they have a question. That means a lot. That we could get our input in first. And it's directly the result of the emphasis and the direction that the utility has taken and with your leadership in the department. Just a response.
I appreciate that. We do really value educating our policymakers. And it's a long game, right? We know that that's not something, we have a very complicated industry that we work for and it takes time to do, but it's a great investment. And I think, you know, I get very excited when I think 5 years from now, where we might be with all of these relationships that we're sowing, particularly in my realm, federal level. You know, we're doing amazing work locally and at the state level. I think federal is the next focus.
Kim, I'm going to interrupt you just for a second. So we have a member of the public has their hand raised in online, and I just want that person to know we're not making public comment. This is just an opportunity for the board to do some learning together. So, sorry, go ahead.
Legislative guiding principles. So back in 2020, the commission approved a set of legislative guiding principles that were designed to serve as the guardrails for the work that the government relations team does. Often the pace of work, particularly at the state level, doesn't allow us the luxury of getting buy-in from everybody that we would love to get buy-in from every step along the way. We have to make real-time decisions in order to have the influence that we want to have. And so we developed these guiding principles in addition to our mission and our values to help say if we're coloring within these lines, then we feel comfortable and confident that we're aligned with the thinking of leadership at the district. And our commitment is that we'll call it out when we're not aligned in one of these. And I acknowledge that sometimes this gets messy. Our work is messy. We operate in the gray often, and these can step on each other a little bit. We'll call attention to that when that happens. We use these to help guide what will land in our key legislation report, how we want to report on things, decisions of how we're going to engage or not. So these really serve as a driving factor in combination with the strategic plan. That's how we bring a little transparency to a world that's a bit chaotic and needs real-time decision making.
I have a question and I saved it from this morning just for you about your slide.
Sure.
So I've been following, I have personal interest in HR82 that the president just signed, the Social Security Fairness Act. And I'm curious, I can imagine that may potentially benefit some of our employees, future and past and present. And I'm curious, it doesn't really fall into these categories. Do we engage in that kind of...
Sure. So I want you to have confidence that we're monitoring everything.
Yeah.
Not everything is going to rise to the surface of piece of key legislation that might land on the state report, but we are watching all of these things as best we can. It's a large volume of bills that move. And we have help through trade associations at the federal level. But yes, those are things that we watch, we engage, and then we think, how much impact will this have on either the business itself or our employees, and how do we want to communicate on that? What would be the most effective way to do so? So sometimes we'll do write-ups in district daily on specific things. Other times it might just be a flag to HR that if people are asking about this, here's some highlights of what this means. Does that answer your question? And finally, I just wanted to end with engagement with the board. My team does regular reports and updates to you all. We have two main reports that we do, and then issue-specific things as they surface. The key state legislation report you heard Ryan report on earlier today, we're really proud of that. It's evolved over time. I think it's a great tool. Nice metric of that is I had a conference in December, and I had two different GMs from different utilities say that they look at my report to you all to understand what's happening in the state realm. So that was a nice kudos. We also have a government relations activity report. That's just our place to kind of throw things on the page that we think you might hear about in your communities, you might find interest in. We include articles that we think could be interesting reads. Sometimes that's a way for us to hedge a little and say, this is probably an issue you're going to hear about soon, so start reading these materials now so that we all understand a more broad landscape of what we're talking about. There's a lot of we gut check that stuff. It's just instinct on what I think you all might get the most value from, and always open to suggestions if you have thoughts on how we can improve that report too. Second, engagement opportunities for the board. We try to keep an eye out for opportunities in the community and flag those for the clerks, our wonderful clerks, to say, hey, you all might be interested in this, and to make sure that you're aware of the things that we know that are happening. And just general preparation when you're out, if needed, to help flag maybe there's a lawmaker at an event, and we want you to know that they just helped us with something and give a quick kudos and thank you. We're also here for general support. We have trade associations. We have to take votes on various policy resolutions and things. We back up the board in making recommendations for how we should vote on those, asking questions related to that, and specific preparation for engagements with elected officials. That's a very quick synopsis of what my team, the GR part of my team, does for the day.
Questions? So in the second half of our presentations, your strategic.
Laura Limke is going to come back and do a different presentation on the strategic plan. I think that's going to take a little more time.
Yeah.
We want to actually have a chance to explain how we got to where we are and the work that went into that, and then in more detail walk through not only the strategic plan, but the dashboards that you all see. So that'll be a separate and distinct presentation.
Human resources. Thanks.
Hello, good afternoon. I'm Sarah Kurtz, the Chief HR Officer. Appreciate you having our team here to tell you a little bit about our department and give you an overview. I want to share with you some information about what we do in human resources, but before I jump into that, I want to tell you a little bit about who we are. So each of the three managers are here today, so I want to introduce Dana Paula, who's right here behind me. Dana manages the benefits, wellness, and our HR operations teams. I think Amanda's here, Connor. Amanda and Sharon are a little bit further back. Amanda's a senior manager as well, and she manages employee relations, talent development, and labor relations. And then Sharon Rainin, another senior manager. She's got the HRIS team, recruiting, compensation, and leave administration. So behind the four of us, there's about a total of 30 people in human resources. I wish they could all come and meet you today. Wasn't feasible. But hopefully you'll be able to make some connections with names and faces having met the four managers. Kind of circling back to tell you a little bit more about each of the functions. So Dana's been here at the district for 30 years, manages everything. Dana was just a little girl. Fresh out of kindergarten when you got started. So she manages everything related to our benefits. So that's the health and wellness, medical, dental, vision, all of the things that you would normally think of in a benefits program. Just this past year, in early 2024, we were able to hire an employee, Jenny, who's dedicated to wellness. And so that's also under Dana's team. And then Dana manages our HR operations. And those are our front desk folks that are the first people you see when you walk into our department, or if you call our main phone number, they're the first people that answer the call, and kind of the face of our HR department. Amanda's next, and Amanda's been here about 20 years, and she runs our employee relations, and that's everything you can think of. We're a manager may need some assistance with dealing with employee concerns, performance, pretty much anything under that realm. Talent development as well, and that has a lot to do with preparing our employees for the future, training and development, career pathways, and then labor relations, negotiating the contracts, working through grievances, you know, day-to-day questions and concerns that come up with the contract. And then Sharon runs our HR information systems. So that's a small but mighty team that keep everything up to date and the data that goes in behind HR concurrent.
Now, how long has Sharon been here?
Oh, also 30 years. Also 30 years. So Dana and Sharon are close. They're right on the 30-year line.
Thank you, Commissioner Olson.
Yeah, she started when she was fresh out of kindergarten.
That's right. That's right. And we know HR is near and dear to your heart. Recently, Sharon has taken on recruiting and compensation programs as of November. Those are in her area. And then leave administration, which can be very complicated. Yeah. So, and then there's me. I've been with the district 20 years as well. So I was joking with Kim a few minutes ago. The four of us collectively are at about 100 years of experience. Not that we're being competitive at all, but I did kind of tally that up, and 100 years between the four of us.
Looks to me that everyone that started working for PUDS and when they were teenagers,
that's
right?
Yes, we did.
Yeah. Mentioned, we have a robust internship program. So we all started when we were in middle school. Yeah. And we have been here since. But I do think that our tenure is a testament to what a great place it is to work.
Get off the age thing.
Baby's first words were PUD. Good job, John.
Let's move on.
So last year, in the early part of 2024, the whole HR team worked together to develop what we call our value proposition statement. We've shared that out with the district through different means, and it's posted on our website. And this was intended to document and convey the value that we bring to the organization. So a lot of HR departments and what you might be used to elsewhere are very compliance oriented. And there's certainly a piece of that that we're responsible for and making sure that we're within the boundaries of employment law. But we also bring a lot of value in the things that we do that are above and beyond what's just minimally required. We have a lot of programs that I'll touch on here in a moment that we do because we want to, because it makes this a better place to work. So our HR value proposition was meant to kind of get that down on paper and have something for us as a department to always look back at. And we dust it off once a quarter and get it out in front of ourselves and make sure that the things that we're doing are in alignment with this value proposition. Now, the value proposition is actually two lengthy pages, and I wasn't going to have time to go over all of that with you today. So I took it and I ran it through Microsoft Copilot. So I'm doing a little practicing using AI. I'm by no means an expert, but it took that two pages and it boiled it down into these four bullet points. So just at a high level, you know, our value proposition is to deliver essential people services to support and uplift our current and future employees and help them thrive, to enhance our organizational success by cultivating a dynamic and inclusive environment, fostering talent development and learning, ensuring employee well-being, and ultimately creating the culture and capabilities that we need now and for the future. And as a team, we're committed to building trust and respect as consultants, advisors, and partners to the organization. So with this value proposition in mind, I alluded to some of the programs that we do that are above and beyond what we're required to do. We do a lot because we want to, and because it keeps folks coming back, it retains, it attracts employees, and it just makes us better situated to serve our customers. So I just wanted to share with you a couple of the programs that we do that are kind of in that realm of above and beyond. I alluded to having a wellness program. So just about a year ago, we hired someone to come on board and develop a program with a focus on helping our employees being their best at work, but also at home. So we all cross back and forth every day, and we the things that impact us at home can impact us at work and vice versa. So we've been working on developing a robust program to assist employees with their physical and mental health and provide resources. Talent development. This group supports the training efforts for our employees and helps build capacity so our employees can grow within their jobs, be skilled and prepared to do their jobs, but also to be ready for promotions when new opportunities come along. Apprenticeship programs. We're very proud of these. We have a robust apprenticeship program that we help facilitate, and we have apprentices in the line department, metering, substation, and system operations. Line department and usually substation hire apprentices just about every year. The others kind of alternate years, but we have a really dialed in and robust apprenticeship program. We have a mentorship program. We're just coming into our third year of matching up mentors and mentees to work together as we need to grow and develop. So that's a homegrown internal program that we're really proud of. And right now we're in the process of standing up a job shadowing program. So this is a way for employees to offer or to request to go out and job shadow in other parts of the organization, just to get an idea of what some of the other jobs are and what they might be interested in doing in the future, or sometimes not interested. Sometimes you can see a job and realize you don't want to do that.
You know, this value proposition, Commissioner, I would add that as you're out and about, you're going to be talking to other commissioners from other utilities in the Northwest, and there's often the concern they have that perhaps our pay is higher than others. And, you know, we're an urban area. So we're one of the three urban utilities in the state, highly urban area in the Republic. And also just a conscious effort to, you know, recruit and retain the best talent. And so they're probably jealous, but it sounds like a complaint sometimes. No, but I mean, we really do tremendous work.
We do, yeah. And to piggyback off of that, you're going to have to look far and wide to find an organization that invests in its employees like we do. I mean, I know there's always more to do, but this is That's why they're coming here. One of the reasons. Kind of benefits.
It's the whole package, right?
Well, that's a whole package.
Interesting work.
You're not going to find any organizations want to invest in the future of their employees and develop them. So hats off to you.
And I think the for-profit world, we can't just compete on salary, but we can we can compete on quality of life and, and working and team culture.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, and we can orient you further about that program as well in the future if you're interested. But we worked closely with the commissioners and our managers to develop a compensation philosophy that describes how we want to pay and attract and retain our employees into the future.
Thank you. I have too much to learn.
I'm sure that will be your top priority.
My brain is one part is in Spanish and English is like. thank you.
You'll get there, dear.
All right. So coming into the next couple of years, I thought I'd share with you what some of our five or six of our main projects that will certainly span multiple years, but these are our top priorities right now. So we want to continue to understand and enhance our employee engagement. So you may have heard that we did an employee survey, an engagement survey. Those results came back around November time period, and we're still looking at that, analyzing those results. But the team that's working on that is gathering a cross-functional team to develop action plans so that we can not only understand what employees are saying about their experience here at the district, but what can we do to make their experience better and enhance their engagement. The results were very good, but I think to your point, there's always things we can do better, and we're looking at that right now. Next, we're going to continue to cultivate effective leadership and positive cultural values. So this is going to show up in our ongoing efforts to train and develop our existing leaders and getting folks ready for leadership opportunities in the future if they're interested in that. I talked a little bit about employee well-being a couple of times already, but that's an ongoing priority for our department. Strengthening development pathways. So that is building out clearer progression opportunities for our employees. So if you're in a job family, making it really clear what you need to do to advance in that family, or perhaps you want to jump over into another job family and try something new. What are the skills that you already have that you can bring with you to another job family and then advance that way? So we have a bit of work to do there, but we want to build that out so that any employee can look at this plan or look at their job description and understand what it takes to advance and grow. And we want to continue to elevate our employee experiences through technology and through business process improvements. So using technology to our advantage and making sure that things are as seamless and smooth and understandable as possible.
I have a question. Just curious, how often did you do the employee survey?
Good question. We did a comprehensive one a couple of years ago, and we built it ourselves. And then this time we used a consultant. So we hired a firm, a vendor that came in, taught us about best practices, gave us suggested questions, and they actually sent the survey out and compiled the results for us. I don't know that we've decided, I'm not looking to annually. We're going to do an annual thing. So we do want to be able to benchmark and see where we've made improvements over.
That's very nice to do that. I mean, relationships and communication is crucial, and to find out how the employees feel and the environment and welcoming and everything. So I'm really pleased for that.
We were really pleased that we had a 68% participation rate. So
that's really good. 60% out of
68% of our employees. And so we have roughly 1,200 employees. So that's 68% participation.
That's good data.
It is. And we're able to dig into that. We're able to kind of slice and dice it and see, you know, which departments we can target a little bit more in the future. So maybe their participation wasn't high and we can do a little bit better job communicating to them. We're able to, you know, union, non-union department and so on to really dig into that information.
So we've just kind of scratched the surface of looking at it. More to come.
Thank you.
And then some of the ways we interact with you, of course, we would come forward with any vendor contracts. I put amendments to the collective bargaining agreement, but actually the collective bargaining agreement itself would come to you for approval. And we're on a current cycle of 4 years. So the existing contract went into place April of this year. So we got a little ways to go before we're looking at the full contract again. But any amendments to that would come to you for approvals. Any litigation or settlements related to employment matters, I'm going to talk to you about. And then, as Commissioner Logan touched on, our compensation philosophy is set by you. And each year we bring the structure, the salary structure to you for approval. So that'll be coming up next month.
Another area that I might suggest that you take the opportunity to do more in-depth study of that, because I think it will help the curriculum in understanding that philosophy. Because you mentioned that that there are some of you that criticize, but they're not reaping the benefits we are. Anyway, just a suggestion.
That's all I have, unless you have questions.
Any other questions?
No.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Christy Sterling. I'm the Chief Information Officer. So I'm here to talk about the Information Technology Services, or ITS, division. I'll be providing a brief overview of our division and some of the departments and some of the key trends that we see in technology. A big part of how we perform our jobs in IT is really our dedication to enhancing the company's digital presence and enabling the work of all the employees throughout the district. Some of the things that we touch on are enabling all the employees who focus on the operations of the utility, the customer experience, so the technologies that touch our customers. Those are the type of things that we partner, again, with people throughout the district to provide those technology solutions. Now, like everyone here, it's really hard to narrow down all of IT into 10 or 15 minutes, but I'd like to give a little bit of a highlight about the makeup of our division. These are departments within the division. IT work is challenging and expansive. It takes a lot of different expertise to manage technology of a modern utility. And so that's why you see so many different departments represented here. So these are just a bit of a high-level overview. The first that I have listed up there is the Applications and Operation Management, or the Applications team. That's managed by our senior manager, Kevin Long. And that team really focuses on developing and supporting all the applications that everyone utilizes. So there are many across the organization, but we have developers, people do configuration and integration, so they have a lot of expertise in setting up and implementing the applications that we all use. The next listed there is our Information Technology Operations Department. That senior manager is Chris Thorpe. And if you think about the foundation of a building, this team is the foundation of all technology at the district. They manage the network, firewalls that protect us. It's the they have hardware, servers, and they are also the department that has the help desk, so desktop support. You call someone in IT and need assistance with anything, this is the team that you'll have first contact with, and then they'll help ensure that you don't have to figure out who in IT will help you. They rally the that group around fixing whatever solution or providing you with whatever technology needs you have. We have an impressive data and analytics team. This is the group that provides detailed data and analytics. They partner again with people across the district to provide them the reports and dashboards and analysis that they need to better understand the district, our operations, and how we want to move forward together to improve decision making. This includes, again, people who are expert in analytics, but we also have a newer role on this team, which are data scientists. And if you think of analytics as being very comprehensive and detail-oriented, the data scientists are setting us up to do amazing things in the areas of automation and AI. So a lot of really impressive things that come out of the data and analytics team. They're also the ones who help support a lot of the dashboards. And I know that's near and dear to all of our hearts, but particularly to John's heart.
Yeah.
And yours. We have an IT project management office, and we have very experienced project managers that manage the most technical projects that we have. If you think of large technology implementations that require cross-functional teams from experts around the district, vendor management, infrastructure and application development, our project managers in this department are the ones who take on those projects and lead them to success. They also include some test managers that help us test to make sure once we implement those projects that they're done so successfully. So this is a group that really gets the opportunity to work with everyone again across the district to do many, many of the projects that that we're all working on. Our information security department is a small and fairly new department that's been normally in past years really dispersed across everyone in IT, and that's still the case. We all have responsibility for securing our technology, our network, but we have recently created a small department under the management of Kevin Johnston, and they are really taking IT security to the next level. That's incredibly important because the threats against not only any company or any technology, but particularly the threats against public-facing companies like utilities are ever-increasing in cybersecurity. So Kevin Johnston is leading that team. I should have mentioned, I'm sorry, I'll step back. Data and analytics is managed by Chris Bridge, and the IT project management office is managed by Doris Payne. Next, we have enterprise architecture. And when I touch on enterprise architecture, I'll also say that we have several other architects that focus on applications or infrastructure or data and analytics. But we have an enterprise architect. His name is Mark Rawson. And the whole role of an architect in IT is that just like you would have if you're building a building. They're the ones who has the vision on bringing all the pieces of the technologies together in order to meet business goals. So they're really tying technology to business goals. And then they work with the developers and everyone else to deliver on that technology. But they're the master planners for how we're going to meet goals with technology. Next, we have a couple of people who moved from the distribution engineering division back to IT. They sit between those two groups, and they both have experience in both of those groups. But we have a couple program directors, and they're leading the largest programs at the district, and that's NoSmart, so our DOE grant for grid modernization. That's run by Kevin Lavering, and ConnectUp, our AMI deployment, and that program director is Tim Epp. And so we are partnering with them, and they reside in IT as well. Finally, last but not least, we have a budget and admin team. We have a lot of contracts in IT and fairly complex budget. And so we have a small but mighty budget and admin team. They help with managing financials, procurements, RFP, requests for proposals, and administrative tasks within IT. So a lot of different people all working in unison, not only within our division, but with our partners across the company to help deliver the technology. We have a lot going on in IT, so it's hard to talk about all of the different projects or support that we provide, but some of the ones that I think you'll find most interesting are the information technology trends. And this really aligns with a lot of the trends that are occurring within the utility industry in general. I think we can all agree that it's an exciting time to be in the utility industry, and it's a really exciting time to be in technology as well. And so some of these are highlights of where those two businesses intersect. One, again, I mentioned cybersecurity. We're actually coming to you in the next commission meeting with your annual cybersecurity update. So we'll be back and talk a little bit more in detail about that. You'll get to meet Kevin Johnston and the team of three that makes up his team. So that'll be the next commission meeting. And then also it happens, the next commission meeting will also be providing an update on artificial intelligence. That's something that I know the commissioners have been looking forward to for some time. We're at the next step. We've really worked over the last year and a half with Colin's team and with others to develop a strategy and governance rules around artificial intelligence. And now we're getting ready to kind of kick off the next step, which is program management and looking into all the opportunities that it may bring. At the same time, making sure that we are making the right moves for the district. So we'll be coming back to you next meeting with a brief update about artificial intelligence. Grid modernization technology enhancements, that's something that, again, is talked about a lot. You see it in news and in industry journals, the touch point that we have there. And I want to be clear that this is not an IT-specific project or program. This is in partnership, again, with the experts across the company that really have their hands on the operation of our grid and our operations. But we do have some modernization enhancement projects, again, SnowSmart, and that is the GRIP grant with the Department of Energy. And that is really exciting because we have the opportunity to upgrade some of our core technologies, in this case, our advanced distribution management system, our SCADA systems, our outage management systems, all of these things that have grown over the years and become so vital to our operations and our ability to communicate with customers during storms or outages. We're in the midst of really kicking off the work to upgrade the systems that we have. And so we're all very excited about that.
Huge undertaking.
It is a huge undertaking.
Really didn't have letters.
And I appreciate that you understand that.
Absolutely not me.
it is really exciting and it's big. It has become such a core foundation of the operations of the utility, and it's very complex. And it has to operate. All of these pieces have to operate so that the people in the Energy Control Center communicating, the people in the field, communicating to our customer service representatives who are talking to our customers, all this technology and data behind it have to work seamlessly in order to make sure that we're effective in how we manage those operations. So not just during storms, but every day of the year. So again, that one's really exciting and we're happy that that's kicking off. We really see a convergence of operational technology and information technology. And so without, I guess, going too much into the weeds there, in the past, there has historically been a little bit of a divide. You had all things IT related, and then in distribution and engineering organizations, you had operational technology. And what we're starting to see is these two go hand in hand and are merging together. And they're incorporating grid operations with IT technology, and again, touching on things like advanced metering, distribution automation, and energy devices and energy storage. All of these things, again, have to work seamlessly. And I think that's really the the big change that I've seen in technology, particularly in utilities over the last 10 or 15 years, is we used to have individual technologies that served individual departments. And we've become so much more integrated. And there's a lot of great opportunities that come with that. And that's what we see in convergence of IT and OT. We also see data as an asset. Again, a little mind shift. For years, people have used reports, but data is really becoming an asset. We have a lot more data than we ever did before. And then we're trying to dive in and figure out how to maximize the use vast amounts of data to optimize operations, to support customers in their management of their own utilities. Think AMI information and how that will revolutionize how customers interact with their own utilities. So again, a lot of data and a lot of opportunities, and that's certainly a trend within this industry as well as others. Cloud computing, I won't go too deeply into that, but it is a change and it does make a difference to us because historically companies had a lot of on-premise architecture, infrastructure to support technologies. All that's moving to cloud solutions. So we'll have less technology actually residing in our data centers and utilizing more cloud services. And that's just changing how IT companies relate to businesses like ours. And so we have a lot of work around moving to cloud technologies. And a lot of that's really, really positive. It helps us support operations more efficiently and allows more scalability than in the past. Now, with all of this, I would be remiss if I didn't mention kind of the flip side of the trends. Those are all positive trends, I'd say, in one way or another. With this is also rising costs. Just like everyone else, we're faced with rising costs and rising costs of technology while managing our budgets. So we try and balance both by negotiating good contracts, by being, looking at opportunities to re-architect. So a lot of work to trying to manage costs, but we do see the cost of technology rising quite a bit. Some studies show that anywhere from 9 to 20% increase with most technology service providers. And we have seen that trend over the last couple of years.
We have some unique technology challenges that other organizations don't have. Can you talk a little bit about some of the customer-facing IT stuff we have and where that's going, and also about the kinds of devices and abilities that people in the field have using technology to how our system works and operates and stuff?
I'd love to talk about that, and I'll touch on it, okay. And then it might be something interesting to come back and dive into each of those in more depth, because I think they're really important, and there's a lot for each of those, and I don't want to steal the thunder of John Hoffman or others related to some of the cool things that their divisions
that's
are doing.
Right, we do have
technology.
The only way.
Yeah,
No. I'll touch on it really briefly because I think it is truly exciting. We've seen such a change, and our customers are embracing this technology in new ways than they have in the past. And so I actually think that it's worth a detailed discussion at some point. But we have many things to help our customers engage with us in different ways. We have a customer portal, for instance, and they can log into the portal. They can see data about their usage. They can pay their bills. They can interact with us through the data portal. The other thing that we have is outage management. We have outage maps that customers can see, and we've had some enhancements to our outage maps recently that if customers enroll and sign up through the portal, for instance, they can actually see down to, or they can get interactive messages based on their actual premise and not just a general message about us being out. So we're trying to get to a point where they really can see and interact with us at their particular level. And there's constant enhancements. And again, I think John's team will probably come back and talk about some of the other enhancements and roadmaps for customer interactions. So really trying to get information to the customers in a timely manner and allowing them many different ways to choose the channels that they prefer to interact with us in the ways that work for them as well. So that's on the customer side. On the field side, Several years ago, we implemented SAP and we started using some iPads in the field, for instance, for work management. There's some things that we've constantly tried to improve in partnership with our field employees. But again, outreach communication kind of starts with the field and their ability to indicate, you know, when work is going to be done and when they're complete with jobs. So all of that has to go back through all the systems. So eventually there's that distinct line between our field employees, the technology that they use, how it's consolidated in technology and managed internally to the operations, and then how it's communicated out to the customer. Again, hopefully if all things work right, it's really quick, seamlessly going through all of those different layers of technology and processes. So I don't know if that gives you a little bit of sense of what we're working on. We could spend all day talking about this.
Yeah. And your customer side, do the customer have the opportunity to click the button and choose a language or something in order to go through?
Sorry. Our website?
Yes.
So we use Google Translate.
Okay.
So,
okay, thank you.
And so there are several different ways that we have language options, for instance. So we also have an IVR, and we have IVR prompts in Spanish. We also have the opportunity to engage with Language Line for many, many other languages. We're taking that those concepts and also applying those to the portal, but I don't know quite where we are on that. So, yeah, John.
John Hoffman, Chief Customer Officer. Yes, Customer Officer. I'm sorry, we have new titles, so we're working hard to get used to them. So, yes, everything that Christy said in terms of technology, we do have availability through the IVR. We do have availability through the website. One thing that we're very proud of that we're actually working on with Sarah's team is our recruitment of bilingual employees as well. So we want to have the experience when a person does call and English isn't their primary language, to be able to offer them service in the language that they prefer as well. Certainly, we already have theirs for our bilingual Spanish skill, but we are looking at other languages as well where we may need to be that support.
Thank you.
Like my snow is that multilingual?
Absolutely. So you can translate it in a browser now. I can say that that's not always a perfect experience. So it's an area that Christy and I partner with on how do we make sure that long-term is going to be the ideal experience, but right now it can be translated.
And with all the sensitive information that we have, I mean, how will we prepare if we face a cybersecurity attack or something like that? So.
Yeah, absolutely. Cybersecurity it's really important that youth commissioners and us as a leadership team have our eyes on cybersecurity, and it's something that I'm really grateful that everyone does see the importance and the risks around cybersecurity. And we'll come back in the next meeting, give you a more detailed update. In general, what I'll say today ahead of that meeting is, we have taken, over the last few years, we've really taken a different approach. Security has always been important to us, but we've taken a security first mindset. And so when we bring on a new system, we work with the vendors that provide that solution. We set our expectations on security. We look to ensure that we're applying our security principles and high standards from the very beginning. And then for all of our existing systems, we go back and continually make sure that we're applying security patches, we're evaluating the architecture, we're constantly keeping ahead of security. We're also engaged with security agencies at the federal level, at the state level. So we have a lot of connections to be looking for possible attacks or information. And then finally, I'll just say we have robust monitoring of all layers of our technology footprint in order to identify quickly when there could be a vulnerability and tackle that. And the last thing I'll say is We've also done a pretty comprehensive education program to educate all of our employees on how they can protect the district, but also protect themselves at home. So really educating and spending a lot of time talking about phishing attacks or people trying to trick us, they're getting so sophisticated. So we're constantly trying to update people on how to continually protect the district, because really we can do all the monitoring in the world, but if we make mistakes on the human side, then that can open up vulnerabilities as well.
And the commissioners, we have the same training as well, the employees.
Yes, you have access to training, but I don't know if...
I ask that because sometimes it's phishing emails that we might receive. It looks so real that you cannot get clicked, so I don't know. So,
phishing test.
Yes.
And no, I don't know. We haven't gotten one in a while, but if we have, it's been well hidden.
Sorry that I have a lot of questions. I forgot the Allison. I have to go ask Allison.
That is, okay. And we just confirm that is something that the clerks will go over with you in particular. And we do have training and we give updates in the district daily. Different things. So I think there's many ways that you'll be able to see that training as well. Yeah, great. Thank you for your interest and support in that area. Just wrapping up here, we talked a lot about quite a few things. I wanted to talk a little bit about where we have most interaction with the commissioners, with you, and that's related to our budget. Our budget includes salary, hardware, software, cost, maintenance, professional services. There's a lot of them. So we have about 270 contracts of varying sizes. And again, we work with other departments to align our technology investments to district strategic goals. Where you'll see us most often is on consent agenda approval items. So you'll see the request to either purchase new software or services or renew contracts. But periodically, you'll also get program updates. Again, we have the program directors for ConnectUp and SnowSmart in IT, and they come at fairly regular intervals to give you updates about those programs. You'll also see things and updates from us when we do major investments or implementations. Looking out into 2025, 2026, you'll start to hear about core technology upgrade. We are, core technology is SAP. And that is changing to what's called SAP RISE. And so we'll start to educate on that. And eventually that will come back as a contract update as well. So that's pretty much how we interact with the commission. And again, I really thank you for the opportunity to talk a little bit about IT. And if you have any other questions or want to do a deeper dive into anything, certainly reach out and we're happy to do that. But also remember, if you need any help, our help desk is there to help you as well. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, we're right on track. You're doing great.
I don't know what our schedule is. Are you saying that?
Right on track. Last presentation, power supply department.
I promise I won't ask questions.
Oh, that's okay.
This is the fun part.
Great. Well, we'll keep rolling here. I'm Garrison Moore. I'm the senior manager of power supply. Want to talk a little bit about what our department does and what you can expect from us. If you miss some of our content today, I promise you won't miss it after the next board meeting, where we have three separate briefings that we'll bring to you. So lots of opportunity to get to know us. But these are the big power supply responsibilities. And before I get into those, I really want to call your attention to the green box on the right-hand side. We do have quite a bit of things that we're working on, but we really don't work on the portfolio that we have alone. We really prefer to work in cross-functional teams to get perspectives from across the district, a lot of help from our finance folks, our legal folks, power scheduling, government relations, and the list goes on. So for us, all of these things that we do with Team PUD, and that's a big part of how we approach the work. But these are the things that we do. So Long-term planning is a big part of what we do, from the electricity and the transmission needs that we have for load service. So we do what's called the integrated resource plan. It looks at the supply side resources, the demand side resources, the transmission resources that we need in the future over a long period of time to serve our load, and identifies the resource strategy that ends up at the lowest reasonable cost to serve our customers. It's one of the plans that answers some of the big questions that our customers have all the time. Been here for quite a while. We have a lot of the same questions about electrification. What's that gonna look like for us? What's our cost trajectory? How clean can we be into the future? The IRP really looks at those things and says, well, this is our load trajectory. These are our options. This is the cost of those options, and sets that strategy. So you'll hear more about it on January 21st at that briefing. And we really do like to bring that in installments, to bring the commission with us one step at a time. So you won't see the whole thing all at once. You'll see it in steps.
That's a good thing, because it's pretty complicated.
It is. It is.
Year round, every year, we're all in the IRP.
It's more of a lifestyle than a project.
Absolutely.
So that's one of the things that the IRP does. One of our other responsibilities is regulatory compliance. And so clean energy policy is something that's a hot topic in our region. So is carbon policy. And that comes into play in our planning. It is through the IRP and the solutions to regulatory compliance in that IRP. So renewable portfolio standards, there's four different ways to comply with that portion of state law. And so we need to evaluate all of those and find the best fit. Clean Energy Transformation Act is one of the big clean energy policies in our state, and we need to have a great plan for that. Climate Commitment Act is new, but that sets the carbon market and the carbon regulations in Washington state. Those are opportunities for our customers as well. So we take those on and we come up with a coherent, holistic strategy to address those things. Part of how we do that is with the contracts and resource management. So we need to have a portfolio, power resources, transmission resources. Sometimes we need to acquire resources. Other times, we're going to need to remarket some resources. We need to manage those long-term contracts, especially EPA power and transmission contracts. We're changing those products this year, and it's a big process with a lot of moving parts. And beyond that, there's a lot of policy changes in the state, the region, the federal government with BPA that can impact our customers and our power supply. And so we partner with our other peer departments with the region to help navigate what those impacts could look like for us and to get to good outcomes. You also hear a lot about the market environment, which is also changing. A lot of change going on. So looking at organized markets, how those are developing, how those could impact us. It's an important part of the work that we do. And we have some great experts that you'll hear from also on January 21st. We can talk more about the work that we're doing there. These are the big projects that we're working on. So the first one is just transitioning BPA power product. We're moving from block slice to the load following product and moving to the network transmission product from point to point. Spend about $250 million on BPA power. Spend about $40 million on BPA transmission and ancillary services. So it's important that we do these right and that we have a seamless transition. That's what we're working on. It's a big part of the work. You'll hear more about resource remarketing January 21st. We're going to have some revenue opportunities as part of this transmission. We want to hit those out of the park so that we can help keep our customers' costs low. So you'll hear more about that next commission meeting. You'll also hear about the IRP. We're going to kick that off with the scope, but there's also a lot of math. There's a lot of strategy setting there you'll hear about. We're negotiating the 16-year BPA power contract from 2028, 2044, $250 million a year, 16 years, $4 billion. It's important. We want a great contract, and we're working hard at it. Hear more about the day-ahead market opportunities that are developing in the Western United States and our role in creating and helping to develop some of those options. And as Commissioner Logan said, we are always doing an IRP, so we are working on the next IRP, which we hope to adopt in December 2025. We have the IRP we just adopted, which has an action plan with things that we need to do to set us up well for the future. We need to continue doing those things, even as we create that next roadmap to overlay to it. So with the commission, you know, the work that we do and how we interact, you know, we're going to bring the IRP in steps with the commission. It's an important policy document, and it's an important strategy document. So we want to make sure that the commission's fingerprints are all over it. On the briefings, you know, there's regional issues that affect our industry. We want to make sure that the commission's up to date on what those issues are and how they could affect us. Same thing with organizational strategies for power and transmission. And then there's a number of contracts that need executing, amending, all of the policy implications around once it goes through all these planning documents and becomes the real work that we do and is operationalized, all of those regular governance things to make that work happen appropriately. So that's what you can expect from us. We're frequent flyers here. We've got a great team of experts. 6 folks, 5 economists, and an engineer, all with good backgrounds and good experience on these topics. These, I think, are just a quick snapshot of the things that our customers tell us they care a lot about, how we're doing, where we're at, and where we're headed. So when we do public events, we do a lot of them. Our customers tell us that they are most interested in affordable electricity, clean electricity, reliable electricity. So from a budget perspective, affordability, we're on track of meeting our 5-year power supply goal of keeping purchase power costs flat in 2020 at basis point for 2026 in real dollars, which is a big deal because we've also experienced a lot of load growth. It's not the experience of a lot of other utilities. Part of the reason we're able to get here is we are transitioning PPA power and transmission products. We do have revenue opportunities around the corner with some of these other resources. So we think we can hit that mark, and it's a really difficult mark to hit. Clean resources is in the middle. Here we're talking about the year that was 2023, and just giving a slice that these are clean resources here. We're talking about hydro, wind resources, our own renewables, which includes biogas and our hydro projects. It's a pretty good starting place. We expect that the orange part of this pie chart, market purchases, is going to be filled up with additional BPA. It's going to be a cleaner power mix, which means that graph on the right, which is the carbon emissions, we're well below the national average, well below the state average in a clean state. We expect that that's going to go down further. We'll have even a reduced carbon emission profile with a better cost profile, reliable electricity for our customers. So we think we're on the right track. We have a really good baseline. Our plans really need to do hold the line and keep us focused in a good direction. That's power supply.
Well, you didn't mention the fact that you're doing all this, and your PV team is highly respected in the industry, and it seems like we're always out consulting with somebody else to help them along. Not that that's a great thing, but you also have to have
a plan. We'd like to help carry the load.
I know,
sure.
I know, but.
So To put power supply in sort of context of EPC, which we have this week, and we'll have in the future the meetings that are virtual this week with Adams Portland. So much of that is about working with Bonneville. All in, and so what Commissioner Olson said is we're sort of we take a very much a leadership role in helping work with Bonneville and how we go about that and the strategy that. And so because it's such a huge big piece of our pie and it's going to get even bigger as the orange goes away, it's really a critical. And we spent a tremendous amount of effort to make sure that part is affordable for us, of course. And I think are very well respected for the work we do.
No, that concludes the fund for today. Okay. You can expect a similar format on the 21st in the afternoon.
Operations side of the house.
Operations, finance, customer service. Yeah.
We don't have customer service. Oh, well.
Not today.
I didn't.
Is there any further business to come before the board this afternoon? It is 2:55 p.m. and our meeting is now adjourned.